this is James French.
This is Ted Donovan.
And this is Sensory Motor Awareness, a podcast where we talk about mind-body awareness, health, human development. And this week, we're going to talk about stress. Is that right?
Yep. We postponed it a couple of weeks, but we're finally getting to this critical topic.
Absolutely critical topic. And your work on stress, Ted, is it's different in that your work is it's not about coping with stress after the fact. It's about integrating stress with normal function, or at least an understanding of stress with normal function. And I think it's a very cool understanding. How would you like to approach it today?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that stress is a response in the body that at one point we knew very little about. And at the point that people began to identify stress as an actual, system in the body, or the reaction to stress as an actual identifiable mechanism, we began to take it seriously as a topic. But almost everything, apart from describing how stress operates, is about reducing it, as you said, after the fact. But reducing it after the fact doesn't explain fully where it comes from and our potential to overcome it. And that's what I think that's a key problem to speak about.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So where stress comes from. Yeah. As opposed to simply, I'm not clear about this, Ted. When did the formal study of stress begin, as you said?
Very recently. One of the earliest bits of research was, I think it was at Harvard, a medical guy at Harvard who wrote about the homeostatic mechanisms. And that goes back to France and some work had been done in, what was the milieu? The idea that the organism needs to maintain homeostasis in its environment.
Okay.
We do that if we're dehydrated. We have to hydrate. If there's too much heat, the body has to have a means of cooling itself so we don't overheat. And one of the things people noticed was that when we're put under stress, we have to manage that. And one of the very first observations people made was that if you're put under stress, the body has mechanisms for dealing with that. And one of them was the fight-flight mechanism. It's not quite the same as homeostatic, but in reality, but you have to deal with that situation by removing yourself and fleeing, or by fighting. And that was one of the first times anyone even began to coin that kind of phraseology of the fight flight mechanism.
Okay.
That's one of the origins of the concept. There are other reasons.
I didn't realize that the study of fight flight was integrated or within the context of the study of homeostasis.
Yeah, with Cannon it was, with this researcher, this American researcher, it certainly was. Mm. I know. And there you have an evolutionary kind of perspective. You have the idea that that the organism is trying to survive. Mm. And the fight-flight mechanism is one strategy for doing that.
Mm.
So then people said, well, what is the fight-flight mechanism? Well, there's heightened response. And that you could begin to distinguish from when you don't have a heightened response. A heightened response means, your pupils dilate, your blood sugars are released into your blood. You have, you're ready for action.
Adrenaline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The cortisol, and your body's getting ready to deal with heightened demands. If the demand is, if that demand is removed, then you go back to more of a restful state. And one thing that happens when you're heightened demand, under heightened demand, is that you stop digesting food because you can't afford to allocate energies for that. So now your digestion shuts down. And we've all experienced that. If you're really upset or really under, you know, in danger, you could kind of tell that your digestion comes to a stop.
Yeah.
And then when you are quiet again, digestion resumes. So now you have fight, flight versus rest and digest. And so that's a why. And now people have identified the actual mechanisms in neuroscience. And earlier people identified that there was a whole part of the nervous system that regulated these two things. And there's been so much research on this. The sympathetic part of your autonomic nervous system is the part that heightens the system in readiness for action, and the parasympathetic to quiet it down.
Okay. And it's like, are those like exclusive roles?
Well, they were thought to be, but now it's more nuanced because now, you know, research has shown that you have, it's kind of a, you're pushing and pulling. Some actions require a little bit more heightened response and a little bit less in, you know, a little bit reducing in response. So now you have some activities where you have elements of both, and the nervous system is always regulating actions to, in terms of what's needed.
Mm.
But civilization gets blamed for giving us too much stimulus in the direction of heightening response.
All
and
right.
then you get the modern concept of stress as a kind of reaction to the demands of life, which are considered to be, you know, unhealthy in modern civilization. And it's really not that simple, but, you know, that's the general view.
Okay. So it's almost like a, I don't know, you know, the view that you just expressed is like there's an outside stressor that the body automatically increases its parasympathetic. What would it be? Decreases its parasympathetic activity for?
Yeah, if the parasympathetic would turn off and the sympathetic would turn on if you have increased stress. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like I don't know. I mean, implicit in that view, isn't it, is that the parasympathetic and the sympathetic, like, they're accurately gauging exactly what's going on the outside, and they're appropriately reacting to any outside stress or like outside lack of stress, and so it doesn't really have anything to do with the internal state or I don't know, it's like it's a very external automatic view.
Yeah.
You know?
That's part of the problem. Yeah. Cause what does that mean? You know, when you say a stressor is an objective, when you describe something as a stressor, well, you know, if you stood, for some people to stand on the edge of a building where you have a 100-foot drop, that would be stressful.
Mm-hmm.
But other people wouldn't even think twice about that because maybe they're rock climbers or something. So, so where is the objective stressor?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you say, yeah, but standing on this side of a cliff is on the edge of a cliff is maybe it's not exactly an objective stressor, but if it is for you, then you have to figure out a way to regulate your stress. Still, it begs the question, what makes that stressful if not you and the way you frame it? So that's part of the problem. Mm-hmm. And then also part of the problem is why do we get this stress to begin with? Why is it that we regard civilized life as so stressful, or why do we react to stressors in civilized life such that we accept that as a fact of life, and then look for control in the form of reducing it after the fact, as you said. Mm-hmm. And this is where I began to see in my own awareness of myself that that was a superficial view, mm-hmm. a limited view, because I discovered that, you know, in my own, you know, kind of self-exploration, that if I was able to bring about a more balanced state in myself, my stress was reduced, not just after the fact, but I actually gained an awareness and control over it in myself. So why is that? Yeah. Because that's, we'll say a little, you know, there's more to say about that. But that, to me, gets at a deeper problem, which isn't just, we're no longer looking at just how to reduce stress. And where's the science? I mean, if you can identify a stress mechanism and you could say how it works, and we know a lot about stress. We know that hormones are released in the blood. We know that there's, cortisol, adrenaline. We know that blood sugar changes. That's very useful. We know a lot about the science behind that. Mm-hmm. But when you then practice a relaxation method, let's say, or a mindfulness method, and document that you could lower the stress, where's the science in that? That to me is not science. That's just documenting that there's some correlation between relaxation and lowered stress. It doesn't tell me the real conditions under which stress is regulated. Mm-hmm. It doesn't tell me the real conditions under which you can control it. It doesn't tell me if there's a way that I could be aware in my life such that I can not react when the stress reappears. So the science has become a little bit like with mindfulness. It's one thing to know that there's an executive function which enables us to, maintain attention. But if you then say that the science is just observing the benefits of practicing that, that's not science. That's, as the old saying goes, that's stamp collecting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. What did we say? It was like counting the cracks in the paint on the wall and calculating their slopes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, right.
Yeah. And what would you say is, how do you identify what it means to really gain an awareness and control over stress? That's, to me, is a fundamental question.
Yeah. And then, like, once you have, or, you know, like, once you've seen the possibility, you know, like what you said before, gaining control in real time, you can see what sort of responses are happening, and it gives a new understanding of what those stress mechanisms are, because it seems like what you're arguing against this view is people recognize when they've been overstressed, when their body has been overstressed, but they see overstress as kind of normal, like a normal state. Oh yeah, you know, you just need to de-stress. But it's almost like saying, you know, like a race car driver destroying the engine and then having to stop every couple of laps instead of knowing how to drive properly, so that, you know, engine gets hotter here, it cools down there, hotter here, it cools down there. So like the stress that you're talking about is more like, you know, the parasympathetic and the sympathetic, they're normative functions and they're balancing each other. I guess that you're talking about living a life in balance.
Yeah. Right. But, that's the action part. And then there's also the part where about establishing the balance in order to put that into practice.
Establishing the balance. Yeah.
Yeah. And I would say I would broaden the concept of relaxation or mindfulness, which we know that they reduce stress. I would say that that's inadequate to understand how to come into balance, because if you look at a typical 2 or 3 year old, you'll see that their system, now of course they're not as, you know, cognitively complex as an adult. Mm-hmm. They don't have the worries, they don't have the narrative about the future and the past. They don't have to think about paying the mortgage. You know, kids live more in the present. But along with that, they also have a very, they're in a vital, balanced, musculoskeletal condition that is associated naturally with lower stress. And if you put a kid under stress, a 2 or 3 year old, they tend to recover very quickly. And this is rather like animals, where an animal can be under a great deal of stress. You can see it with a pet dog or cat. They could be under a huge amount of stress, in threatened, having to be in the fight flight situation where they might need to flee or fight and they're in danger. But when the danger is removed, they quiet down quite quickly. And part of that is because the stress, the lowered balance state, is not simply an absence of stress. It's a positive state that tends naturally to regulate the level of stress such that rest and digest can resume. And for the most part, we don't know what that, we have very little, we've had very little knowledge of what that is, and we have very little ability to put that into practice.
Returning to a state of function. Just like you talk about, you know, it makes me think about seeing deer who've just maybe, you know, who are always very alert.
Yeah.
You know, they're prey animals, of course. And so their bread and butter is being alert.
Yeah.
But then when they've had to, you know, let's say they're actually fearful and they run, you'll see footage of, you know, of deer finally feeling that they've gotten out of danger, and their legs will shake free, you know, or their ears will shake free, and then they'll go back to grazing like normal.
Yeah.
So it's muscular related, you know, I mean, exactly. Of course. You know?
Yeah. And there you go. What I discovered about relaxation was that, yeah, you could quiet down, you could relax or practice mindfulness. Sometimes people practice mindfulness, but they're really just sort of spacing out and kind of, you know, relaxing. But you could do some kind of practice like that, and you're not gaining awareness and control of the muscular system. And that's really a fundamental part of the regulatory mechanism that balances your stress response.
Yeah. See, that's what we don't talk about.
No, we have no great little knowledge.
Yeah.
And that's sensory motor awareness. That's part of our practice, right? That we actually teach. You can actually learn to be balanced in your system.
Yeah.
And you could learn that at a conscious level that you could bring into your activity. And that brings up the issue that you raised, which is that when that's working well, now you can carry that into activity. Get out of the chair. You can walk down the street and you could say, I know what it means to be balanced. And now I'm conducting myself with balance.
Yeah.
And now you're talking about a mechanism for balancing the system, and you understand what it is as a regulatory, not just a reaction or lowering of stress, but as a natural regulatory mechanism. And you're talking about the ability to consciously apply that to activity so that you're living more mindfully in activity.
Yeah. Less susceptibly to imbalance, you know?
Yeah.
It gives a new understanding of, you know, I was like thinking before of saying something like, you know, you were learning to more effectively relax, more effectively de-stress, but then, you know, you change that. It isn't that we're de-stressing, you know, it isn't that we're coming out of a state of stress, turning the volume down on stress. It's that you're rebalancing, you know, you're returning to a balanced state. This is the redefinition that you're doing.
Yeah. And the balanced state is something that now is not simply, like you said, it's not just an absence of tension or stress. It's a positive condition that you can positively cultivate.
Yeah.
And we don't have that concept, except perhaps in the form of, you know, a meditative practice where you're quieting the mind. I mean, that's certainly a part of it.
Yeah.
And a legitimate part of it, because that's part of what we need more of.
Yeah.
But apart from that, we don't really have, or perhaps you could say a Tai Chi practice where you're doing something deliberately and slowly, which tends to be associated more with lowered stress than, you know, let's say aggressive or, you know, active, more active movement. apart from that, we don't really have a positive concept of balance, but there is a positive concept, and that's being coordinated with the muscles lengthening, toned, ready for action, but quiet. And that's not, again, not something we tend to value and even want to pursue, because we tend to think of, you know, we tend to medicalize these problems. And stress at heart is not a medical problem. I mean,
it's
not in its cause.
You know, to think about, you know, that problematic understanding of stress as a set of assumptions through which you deduce practices. It's like, if you believe that stress, you know, is something that it just increases in volume and that you need to come down from, then the practice that you'll be led to is something like full body relaxation.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, well, you know, because what I want is complete absence of tension. I want complete relaxation. And that's really what I'm after.
Yeah.
Not after a balanced state. It's actually, this is faulty. And so it's a faulty practice. It's a faulty understanding leading to a faulty practice.
Yeah. Relaxation certainly is. I mean, and if you practice relaxation and you'll know that at some level, because I kind of always sort of, when I first had back trouble and I was young, so I wasn't under stress, you know, you experience stress more as you get older and you're facing more demanding circumstances, you know, typically. But I was practicing relaxation for my back pain, and I felt it was sort of like a quiet state, where at the same time you felt like there was a slow burn of mental preoccupation going on. It was not really a dispersion of stress. It was really just shutting everything down. And really, when you really understand how the body can work in a more coordinated and balanced way, it's as if you shed worry and shed preoccupation and things that are bothering you. You say, I didn't need to worry about that. That was me. That was me worrying. Mm-hmm. And then you locate the problem. And then you're not practicing a method to reduce the stress. Now you're beginning to locate the problem in yourself.
Mm.
And that goes back to what we said at the beginning, where we blame the stress at an outside objective, so-called objective stressor. It was never an objective stressor. The problem as we get older is that we get into an imbalanced state that we need to take responsibility for.
Yeah.
And that imbalanced state is really not healthy.
Yeah.
And we tend to sort of, we don't recognize that because we don't see what kind of a condition we're in. But if you compare the average 50-year-old to the average 20-year-old, you see the difference. It's a really dramatic difference.
Yeah.
Most people at 50 are in kind of a state.
Yeah.
In fact, very often as a teacher, when I've had people come to me, particularly as sort of private students, with a particular problem, I've often felt that people they're in such a state that they need a moratorium. They really need a break from life. They often can't get it, but you feel like, they want it. You want to say, go stay by a lake in a beautiful spot and have a month off and see if you can get a break from, you know, how many, because so many people are so under such strain by the time they're 40 or 50.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then it's legitimate to say that we need time to heal and recreational time. Of course we need that. Many of us.
Yeah. Time off from demands sometimes, which are just like overbearing demands.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of times just too much, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah. Well then, you know, another thing that I think about is, you know, when you're practicing something like relaxation and you don't have a concept of balance used in the way that we're using that term today, balance.
Yeah.
When you don't have a concept of it, I don't know, just like you said, you know, you get into this sort of state where your worries don't diminish, your rumination doesn't really diminish. And your awareness of your environment seems to diminish as well. You know, whereas when you're cultivating balance, your awareness of your environment increases, but without effort.
Yeah. You know?
Or your like the brightness of your perception increases without effort. You know? So you're more vital, you're more energetic, but there's less sense of stress, less sense of effort and demand.
Yeah.
You know? And it's you know, when you don't have a concept of that, you think that in order to become present centered, or I thought, in order to become present centered like I wanted to be, in order to become aware of my surroundings, I really had to try hard. And it was actually increasing my sense of stress. You know?
Yeah.
But returning to balance is different than that.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, because one of the qualities you see in a child when they're in a much healthier general state than in, you know, your typical 40 or 50 year old or 60 year old adult is that they are more perceptually alert. And we think, because kids are more alert, they're more in the present, they don't have to think about things as much. But the perceptual alertness is actually part of being in a healthful condition.
Yeah.
What happens is we think that the mind becomes mainly about thinking, but it's rooted. I mean, our sense of awareness, our conscious state is rooted in perception. You know, as animals that move in space, we're meant to be aware of our surroundings. And that is a basic functional attribute of humans as much as animals, except that the mental field becomes so complicated that we're preoccupied and lose touch with the perceptual field.
Mm.
And when that mental field quiets down as part of a genuinely healthy state, we return to a perceptual field and say, oh my God, where have I been? I've been somewhere else. We wake up into the moment and say, everything's okay. I can be here right now. And I'll, you know, and the interesting thing is you could deal with stress much better if you can get to that point. That's not easy, but if you get to that point, you can sort out things that are bothering you and say, you know what? I can deal with them. I can make a list, get to things in good time. And we don't have a concept of that as a positive. Again, we might have it in meditative disciplines, certain martial arts disciplines, we have concepts of that. But as a general rule, we don't have a concept of that as a kind of we're certainly not taught how to do it in school.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's go, right. Go, go.
Mm-hmm.
Kids have it when they have milk and cookies. I like that because kids have much more balance. You know, we build balance into early childhood, by the time kids are in grade school, balance becomes ignored. Busyness is valued.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even if you have a very busy life, I treasure the time I have not to be busy because it's often the solution to solving the problems that are making me busy.
Yeah.
And we don't give ourselves time to have, you know, I once in a while you'll hear of a CEO, you'll hear of a CEO who spends 10 minutes before they jump into the day because they get perspective or they have ability to separate. Or I remember Yvon Chouinard, the famous climber who started Patagonia, you know, who I admired as a kid because he was so different and edgy and he became head of a corporation, but he was still a rebel, you know.
Yeah, still
great so cool. Values. Yeah, and he would just say in the middle of a meeting, you know, sort of what I heard, but he'd say in the middle of a meeting, let's get out and go to Yosemite and go rock climbing.
Yeah.
He had
surfing.
It's such a healthy attitude to say, get out, get away, stop.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I do that with writing. I just say, stop, go and take a walk, go do something, you know, and the problem will get sorted out. But we don't have a concept of that as an educational good, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And we need to, you know.
Yeah. You know, I'm wondering if this is good to bring up. You know, there's the notion that like stress is what causes physical imbalances, for instance. You know, stress, you know how we talk about like a balanced functional state of the muscle system. You know, we've talked about this in depth in previous episodes, but you know, the way we interfere with it through our own actions, right? But it's tough to see that. And there are theories that abound about how stress is the cause of that. Stress is the cause of, like, say, excess muscle tension.
Yeah.
Stress is the cause of you know, imbalanced ways of performing actions.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. No, it's an interesting idea. So if you, you know, one of the people who did early research, more like in the 50s, a guy named Hans Selye, S-E-L-Y-E, this was a doctor who kept seeing impatient, he noticed in patients that they had a certain kind of underlying malaise or illness that he couldn't attribute to a specific cause. And he was discovering that they were under stress. Mm-hmm. And he was identifying certain problems that accompanied that. So a typical accompaniment of stress would be GI tract problems.
Yeah.
Right. You go to a gastrointestinal, you know, doctor, and they'll tell you, yeah, 80% of my patients who complain of something stomach related don't have an actual objective problem. They're under stress.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're under stress enough, you might develop a problem. So there are legitimate problems that come from stress. But like you said, if you have, and that needs to be recognized, because if, you know, there are times where people really need treatment. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But post-traumatic stress, these are actual brain injuries. Like
a real thing, a real thing that really needs to be addressed. Don't try to, you know, don't try to deny that one. But if you you know, like in our work where we observe the body and how it works, and you identify that you're tightening when you do something, and you say, well, that's because I'm under stress. That's a false form of blame. Nothing's causing you to tighten your shoulder when you pick up a pen. Mm-hmm. You are tightening your shoulder to pick up the pen.
Mm-hmm.
And no one can stop the tightening but you, because you're doing it. So when we use the concept of stress to explain why we're having trouble with something, it's often a form of, it's an apology.
Yeah.
And that's, you're right. That's a false notion of causality.
Yeah. You
know, as if our own behavior is always affected by outside problems, and we're not causing some of our own. We are often causing our own problems.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're vocalizing and you're getting hoarse or having a problem, the voice teacher doesn't say, well, let's get you to a therapist to see it. No, the voice teacher will say, you know, you might be, you're throaty. You're not paying enough attention to how you're using your voice. And they'll try to locate the problem in your own vocal technique. So it's pretty, you know, sort of basic to voice the study of vocalizing. True. That we would identify something harmful.
Yeah.
But often we'll, with other kinds of problems, like with a shoulder, we'll say, yeah, but I'm under a lot of stress. The stress is, I'm carrying a lot of weight. Metaphorical concepts are just kind of nonsense.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The bodywork people will say, well, I don't know where all this, the stress is coming from, the fact that you're holding in all this tension. No, it's not because you're holding it. It's because you're actually doing it. And you really want to deal with it. You got to find out how you're doing that, what you're doing, because you can stop doing that.
Yeah.
Just trying to, you know, release the tension after the fact. That's not addressing the problem. Yeah.
And it's like some of the people who are like the most mature, the most able to deal with how they react to stress, like it and all that stuff, the most balanced in living, could still be messing up their bodies when they, in fact, probably are, you know, say holding a pen in a harmful way.
Yeah.
As we say it. So like it doesn't follow that stress is causing all these things that we talk about in the body. And also it's interesting because the harmful manner with which we approach everyday tasks, it itself adds imbalance. I mean, it's an imbalancing of the system and therefore heightens stress.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, wow, I mean, this is, you know, I don't have any outside stressors, but just the way that I sit every day, or the way that I'm writing or typing, it's adding stress to my system. It's unraveling any balance that I might have had.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There's no question. And the manner in which we do it, you know, not just physically, but the fact that we might be quite reactive in how we're doing it. You do that all day long, and that's going to be, you're going to be in a heightened state of stress due to your own behavior. Mm. So, you know, how you use the body is not just bodily, it's also a form of reaction or form of behavior. And if you're rushing around while you're, you know, writing, some people are just rushing, you're going to be in a state of stress. So you could often see people walking down the street and you could see that the way they're walking is a kind of form of rushing.
Mm-hmm.
And they could, and you know, in New York, that's sort of half the people. You know, you see, you right. look at people walking in New York, and a lot of people walk in a rush state. And if you said, well, you know, you're going to get where you're going, you don't need to, and even when they're not in a rush, you know, they're yeah. rushing. You say, can you walk without rushing? They don't know how anymore because it's become right. so habitual.
Yeah.
And so that's not just physical. That's a whole kind of psychophysical attitude associated with a heightened state of stress.
Yeah.
And you get that person out of that state. So let's say they're standing in a more balanced way and their feet are on the ground and they're coming up from the ground and they're quiet. And then you show them how to walk quietly, they will feel very uncomfortable with that.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to, because they don't want to be without what has become a familiar state.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to learn to be quiet and learn to be balanced.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy. We want to rush.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I value not rushing, you know,
right.
I value not rushing as a positive attribute of, you know, as a good way to live.
Yeah. 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 This is a very like interdisciplinary subject of research, you know, sociology and use. This sort of explains like speeding and all that, you know, when there's someone from the city driving around a small town and they're zipping everywhere.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. This is their normal manner of use showing its, you know, rearing its head.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. Well, so James, so we're going to have, we want to remind people, you'll remember, too.
Yeah. So this is our podcast. Please like, and subscribe, find us on YouTube, find us on your favorite podcast platform. And yeah,
there our topic, we go. Do you know what our topic is, in 2 weeks? I think
it's going to be breathing probably.
Oh, we haven't done it. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Quite related to this. And I want to
mention. Very, very related, right? You know?
Because paying it, holding our breath is associated with higher stress.
Mm.
And many of us go through the whole day holding our breath, you know, sometimes all the time, sometimes intermittently, but we're usually not allowing our breathing to take place normally. And that problem is more that can't simply be solved by paying attention, by practicing a breathing method. Because when you practice a breathing method, well, now you're going to breathe more fully for a little bit, but you're going to go back to whatever your habit is. And your habit is going to be interfering with breathing because breathing is part of your body and how the musculoskeletal system works. So breathing is linked with stress.
Mm-hmm.
And the ability to leave your breathing alone is part of a holistic view of how the body works in a way that is associated with not being stressed.
Yeah.
So breathing is directly connected with the whole subject.
Yeah.
And it's something we could look at positively and not just in terms of, practicing a method to improve your breathing.
Mm,
You can go and, beyond. You
know, like that topic, breathing, it's almost easier to imagine that breathing is actually just part of our normal, you know, I mean, of course, it is a normative function by definition. It's what we need. And, you know, it's easier to imagine that than it is to imagine that the parasympathetic and the sympathetic nervous system, their interaction is just as much a normative function.
Yeah.
As opposed to just getting stress and coming down from it, getting stress, coming down from it. So the breathing view, you know, I think that we have to see the stress view in the same way. I just like to emphasize it to our listeners. Like it's seeing stress as part of the normative balancing function of the nervous system in everyday activity.
Mm.
I think, you know, that's a thing that I think your work is about, and it's a real contribution, I'd say. You know?
Yeah, and breathing also, you know, falls within that. Breathing is, there's a regulatory mechanism, in a sense, you could say, for breathing, and it is the balanced working of the musculoskeletal system.
Mm.
We don't just want to improve on our breathing if we're mouth breathing or not breathing fully. We want to establish the conditions under which breathing works naturally, because we are designed to breathe more fully.
Mm-hmm.
Most animals don't have as many problems with breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Humans do, because we interfere with the system much more than animals do.
Yeah, yeah.
So, well, you know, yeah. that puts us in a position where we're already more conscious than animals, but we haven't fully developed that, and we have to take that to a higher level so that we can actually use ourselves more consciously as part of living in a more balanced way.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, returning to balance as opposed to relaxation, you know, having a more accurate view so we have better practices, you know, we have clearer goals.
Yeah.
Yeah, I look forward to the conversation.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Ted.
Thanks, everyone, for joining. Yeah, thank you, James.
All right.